Religious historian Karen Armstrong doesn't like the either-or good-evil dichotomy. She believes we're hardwired to be selfish and to be kind, and that most of us spend our lives trying to tame our brutal instincts with our better selves. Luckily, she says, we have a powerful tool at our disposal. Compassion. Karen Armstrong has written more than 20 books on the subject of what Christianity, Judaism, and Islam have in common. In 2009, she unveiled her Charter for Compassion, and she's just written a new book called 12 Steps to a Compassionate Life. She told Anne Strainchamps that compassion is the cornerstone of all the major religions. That's why it's called the Golden Rule.
Every single one of the major world religions has evolved its own version of this golden rule and claimed that it is the central pivot of faith, the test of true spirituality. When Rabbi Hillel, the older contemporary of Jesus, was asked to sum up the whole of Jewish teaching while he stood on one leg, he said, "That which is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor. That is the Torah, and everything else is only commentary." Go and study it.
Well, one of the great historical conundrums surely is, how is it that so many religions founded by leaders who preached compassion have had such trouble practicing it? You know, you look back over the history of religious violence, the Christian Crusades, the Arab-Israeli conflict, Islamic jihads. This is such an old story. Why?
Compassion's not a very popular virtue. People would often rather be right than compassionate. Compassion requires you to put your ego on the back burner, and people really don't want to do that. A lot of people like to use religion to enhance their sense of identity and to make them feel good about themselves. And one of the ways of doing that is to say, I'm right and everybody else is wrong.
So in part, it's the old story of power corrupts. But looking back over that history, you really have to wonder whether violence and aggression and the will to power over others are simply part of human nature.
Certainly, we are aggressive animals. And in my book, 12 Steps to a Compassionate Life, I look at the neurology of the brain, right at the center of the brain, the oldest part of our brain we inherited from our reptilian ancestors who crawled out of the primal slime millions of years ago. And without these aggressive instincts that are instinctive and immediate, we wouldn't have survived. Neuroscientists call the drives that fuel this reptilian ancient brain the four Fs: fighting, fleeing, feeding, and reproduction.
Yeah, I don't hear anything about compassion and treating your neighbors like yourself in there.
No, but you see, we went on. We evolved. The mammals developed another kind of brain on the outside, where reptiles just hatch eggs and leave their young to fend for themselves. Mammals started to care for their young, and for the first time, sentient beings were looking after other beings other than themselves. So incipient altruism was developing. We also have these centers in our brains. We're wired for compassion too and for altruism. And that means the whole human race and other species. And no matter how unpromising and disappointing our fellow human beings are, compassion means that we cannot give up on them. In Buddhism, the word compassion, karuna, means to take responsibility for the pain of all others and to resolve to end the pain of human beings and all species.
Well, it seems to me that however you answer the question, are we innately good, innately compassionate, or innately selfish, maybe has a lot of bearing on how you go about trying to foster compassion. You know, if you think that we're perhaps inherently selfish, then maybe we need rules and laws to force us to overcome our nasty instincts. If you think we're innately compassionate, then maybe it's more a matter of awakening us to our true
natures. No, I wouldn't say either of those. I think what we've got is different aspects of our complex, highly complex brains working against one another. Yes, we're selfish, and otherwise we wouldn't have survived as a species. But the religions have all stood outside this and said, if you can't keep that selfishness and egotism in check, human beings cannot live together in peace. And we also make ourselves miserable ego is the source of so much of our unhappiness. When we wake up at 3 a.m, when life often seems very dark, we often toss and turn and say, why has this happened to me? Why has X got this and I have nothing? And resenting all the harm that has been done to me and endless worries about our status and standing in the world. You know, the religions say, look, if you can get yourself outside this self-preoccupation, you'll be happier and more fulfilled. And also getting beyond this egotism, which imprisons us in a sort of self-obsessed world, broadens our horizons and gives us access to what we call God, Nirvana, Brahman, or Tao.
Well, one of the great advantages of all of the old religious practices or religious observances was it was a regular way to remind oneself to at least make the attempt to live by the golden rule, to at least make the attempt to become a more passionate person. We live now in an increasingly secular age. Those old daily and weekly religious observances are not part of many people's lives. In that case, how do we keep compassion front and center?
We have to work at it. Wherever I traveled in the world, east or west, north or south, people wanted to hear a more compassionate way of living and of being religious, which has tended to get lost, especially with institutions can become very sort of, hybrid and institutionalized, as it were, to get back to this inner core of compassion. But it demands hard work. As human beings, one of the things we do is to enhance and work hard at natural abilities. And we learned to run and jump to get away from our predators. And now we have ballet and gymnastics. And if you practice this all day and every day, you can achieve feats that are absolutely impossible for an untrained body and take the physical into a different dimension. And people have found throughout history in the world religions that if they practice the golden rule all day and every day, as Confucius said, not just when you feel like it or when the whim strikes you, but all day and every day, you achieve new capacities of mind and heart.
Well, so far you've described compassion as something of a struggle to overcome our baser natures and as hard work. Can it also be a joyful practice?
Yes, it can. Because when you leave yourself behind a little bit by putting someone else into the center of your world, all this misery that this rat run of the me first brain tends to fall into place more. Your mind broadens. The Buddhists see it as opening out, breaking out of the prison into which egotism traps us. And certainly, but you have to try it to do it. Just as you have to, it's no good expecting that you're going to sort of immediately pirouette onto the stage and become prima ballerina in a couple of hours. It takes a lifetime's work, and then you can achieve these wonderful feats.
I'm up in the woods, I'm down on my mind, I'm building a still to slow down the time.
Karen Armstrong is an authority on comparative religions and the author of more than 20 books on the subject. In 2009, she launched the Charter for Compassion, and her most recent book is called 12 Steps to a Compassionate Life. She spoke with Anne Strange Champs.